Welcome to Nicosia Uncut, prepared and presented by Andromache Sophocleous and Kemal Baykal. In this episode, we had a special guest, the director of Sapienta Economics, Fiona Mullen.
Together, we discussed all things Cyprop ahead of the International Conference on Cyprus, the regional dynamics that are constantly changing, and local politics in both communities.
Welcome to Nicosia Uncut. Hello, Andromache.
Hello, Kemal.
In this very special edition, we have a very special guest, a dear friend, a comrade, if I may, as we are both, Andromache, you and I are political animals, and we have a third one now here in the studio, Fiona Mullen, the director of Sapienta Economics and the producer of Figure It podcast. In this episode, we have agreed to discuss the Cyprus problem and the latest developments initially. And we would like to start making general analysis on the regional dynamics and the expectations leading us to the March meeting in Geneva. And then maybe in the second part, we try to speculate, being honest, a bit about what the roadmap could be. And if we will have some time, maybe we can also discuss a bit of politics. Now, we again found ourselves just before an international meeting. Two sides, the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots, as well as three guarantor powers, are meeting in Geneva in March. There is a lot of speculation. But I think number one question is, what is the motivation of the United Nations for organizing this particular meeting? And I'll pass the button to you, Andromache. I know that Fiona will also be discussing a bit about energy and the regional politics.
Yeah, hello everyone. It is indeed a special episode, and be assured that we are going to do what we normally do even off the record, which is discuss what's going on with the Cyprus problem. And after a while, there is some movement in the Cyprus problem. You are asking for an intention from the United Nations or for what they are aiming for. At the end of the day, maybe even having some movement could be the aim of this whole thing, in the sense that there is a sense that a process is somehow going on, and or at least that a process might restart. And even the anticipation is in itself some sort of movement in a heavily stagnated Cyprus problem. We are going through an unprecedented 7 years of a kind of a stagnation in the Cyprus problem. And now we are talking amidst the visit of the Undersecretary General of the United Nations, Rosemary DiCarlo. She has left Cyprus and she's now visiting, she visited Greece, and today she's visiting Turkey. So we are talking in the midst of this and ahead of the conference that will take place on the 17th and 18th of March. I think that the United Nations is currently trying to see if there can be some ground for things to move towards some sort of a process. But before we embark, I would first like to refer to Fiona, and because she's our guest, and I would like to hear her take on how things are moving.
Okay, hello everyone. I think what is unusual about this meeting is that normally if Greece and Turkey and the UK, so the three guarantor powers, are getting involved, it means that big things are happening. I mean, the last time they met was in Crans Montana in July 2017, when big things were happening. So it's really strange that we're going to have this five-party meeting and nobody really knows what they're intending to talk about and what the intended outcome is going to be. And again, it's labelled as informal, right? So I think that's a way of kind of managing expectations. So it does seem to point to the conclusion that the only reason they're meeting is to make a show of something happening, that for whatever reason, the international community needs it to look as though there's movement on the Cyprus problem, probably because of all the stuff going on in the rest of the region.
You know, since 2004, there was a talk of a Cypriot-led process, and we know that this, if you ask me, failed in Crans-Montana in 2017. And since then, everybody's talking about the need for the international community to get engaged, to get involved, and to push sides to at least not to create another crisis on this part of the world. There are enough crises here currently in the world. So what are the regional dynamics? What are the international dynamics? Because there are many who says that, well, nobody has the willingness to get engaged with the stubborn Cypriots, and that's why it's not going to go anywhere. Can we talk about a bit about this? Maybe Fiona, you would like to address this first.
Yeah, so, okay, regionally we have, in terms of Turkey, emboldened Turkey, which was influential in toppling Assad late last year. So in that sense, if I were a Greek Cypriot, what would worry me about that is that nobody wants to mess with Turkey at the moment, because Turkey is basically responsible for making sure that Syria doesn't spill out into war again, and the EU really doesn't want more refugees coming from the region to the European Union. So in that sense, Turkey can probably get away with rather a lot. You know, we know that it wants to make friends with, well, we know that it's on a path of rapprochement with Greece, so that ought to temper its response. We know that it wants to get deals with the EU, which ought to temper its response, but at the same time, it's also in this kind of fairly strong position. And so that's what would worry me from a Greek Cypriot point of view. And it's related to energy, which I think we're going to talk about a bit later.
Well, I think look at what Israel is taking. And I mean, in the midst of everything that is happening in Gaza, and we are now at a stage in which everything we knew could be toppled. Mm-hmm. And we need to put in the picture the role of the new president in the United States, who just lately he basically came forward with a proposal to move, basically to displace the Palestinians from Gaza and scatter them around the Middle East, for the U.S. to come in and turn Gaza into the Riviera of the Middle East. So we are talking of unprecedented times. And I believe that basically everything regarding the Cyprus problem is happening in anticipation of what Trump could do. So let us, I want us to have this exercise, let's say. Let's think of the moment when Trump will turn his eyes towards Cyprus, and what will the dynamics then be there? And we just had yesterday the new U.S. Minister of Defense basically saying that the U.S. is talking with Russia for a peace deal in Ukraine, in total absence of Ukraine and the EU in the process. So what will happen when Trump turns his eyes towards Cyprus? And we have already talked about in this podcast, Kemal, about how both Trump and Erdogan are transactional leaders. They are leaders who like to discuss in terms of what each side can gain. And if Trump is seeing in Gaza the Riviera of the Middle East, what would he think of Varosha, for instance, if Erdogan brings it up in a discussion? So we need to put in the picture this question mark when it comes to what could happen when Trump finally speaks about Cyprus. Having said that, coming back to to the international conference, I think we need to set the players. So you have Ersin Tatar, the Turkish Cypriot leader. Basically, we can assume that he will follow the line of Turkey. So we have Ersin Tatar, the leader of the Turkish Cypriot community. I think it is safe to assume that he will follow the line of Turkey, even though he seems to protest at times. When the Turkish line becomes a bit softer, he protests. And then you have Greece. Greece is in a position in which it is facilitating the process. I think this is admitted by all. And then you have the Greek Cypriot leader, Nikos Christodoulidis, and Turkey. Nikos Christodoulidis is saying that he wants to proceed with the negotiations. He's talking about the Guterres framework again, etc. But the question here is, aren't we beyond the Guterres framework that then Nikos Christodoulidis seems willing to talk about? And then comes Turkey. What is Turkey's stance in this? In a situation in which after 7 years it has enhanced its role and its presence in the Turkish Cypriot community. So could we be in a situation in which if Turkey is sending signs that it could kind of discuss things, and we can safely say that it is a sign that it wants to discuss things because it gave the go-ahead to this conference. Mm-hmm. So if Turkey is indeed ready, could we see a scenario in which Turkey could make an opening of any sort or of a sort that could not be anticipated by the Greek Cypriots, who seem to be kind of still focused on the old style concept of negotiations in the Cyprus process, negotiations.
Yes, I think we can get a bit into what will be discussed, what can be discussed in the talks or in the upcoming days and weeks. But before getting into there, I have two issues or questions that I wanted to raise with you. Number one, there is also the UK, and it is, you know, they are going to be there. And this is relevant to my second question, which can we talk about a United Nations process without the push and the involvement and the engagement of some big major powers such as the US, the UK, or the EU, or you know, what? So we need to maybe deconstruct this terminology about the international community. So you want to maybe talk a bit about the role of the UK that we expect them, what kind of a role are we expecting them to play? And, you know, if the United Nations initiative is backed by some major powers. Andromahi.
I thought maybe Fiona could take it because I spoke a lot before.
It's okay, she doesn't want to.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think the UK is kind of clearly... well, I think the UK is clearly supportive of the process, but we need to put in the picture that the UK will be underrepresented in the conference. It has been established that the UK will be represented at a lower level than Greece and Turkey. And I think that this is kind of indicative of the way things are going, in the sense that you see the UK's role being kind of in the sense that you see Britain's role being decreasing in the process, even though they are supportive, they are interested. We know that they have engaged with the issue, but still the very fact that they will be represented at a lower level at the conference kind of shows a change of dynamics as well. And dare I say, as to the picture of the Cyprus problem as well, because the UK is a guarantor power of the Republic of Cyprus, and its presence in these sort of conferences was as a guarantor power in the presence of Cyprus. At the same time, you have Turkish Cypriot leader Ersin Tatar constantly saying that basically Greece and Turkey are the two motherlands, let's say, of Cypriots, and this is the reason they should be represented, but not the UK. So it is a compromise for the Turkish side that the UK is actually represented, because if you remember at the beginning, they were saying that they didn't want it to be represented. I mean, the Turkish Cypriot side was saying this, but it is still kind of indicative that they will be represented at a lower level. So basically, yeah.
So, yeah, I think answering your question, Kemal, about big powers involved, what I think my hunch here is that actually this isn't driven by the, let's say, classic big powers. It's not driven by the US. It's not driven by the UK. I think it's driven by Turkey and Greece and the fact that they want to keep their channels of rapprochement open. Everybody keeps saying, oh no, Turkey and Greece want to make friends and they want to keep Cyprus out of it. My hunch is that they have realized that they can't do full rapprochement with each other without fixing the Cyprus problem, or without somehow putting an end to the Cyprus problem, whatever that looks like. So I think that's why we see, you know, if the UK were driving this, of course they wouldn't accept being at a sort of lower level. We know that the US is less visible, let's say, in driving the Cyprus problem. And the EU is, you know, not invited anyway, so they can't play much of a role in March. So this is why I think it's all very new. And it goes back to what Andromache said. We are living in a completely new times. And I don't think anybody should be running a foreign policy, much as we would love it to do that. But I think a foreign policy which is, quote unquote, based on principles, is a path to self-destruction. You need to wake up and realize we're now in a transactional age, and that's what you need to do in order to keep your people secure, whoever you are and wherever you are. So going back to the question about what might, you know, if Trump turns around and suddenly pays attention to Cyprus, you can imagine him saying, okay, you Turkey, you keep your northern bit of Cyprus. I get to invest in Varosha. And the Greek Cypriots, you just live with the American bases in Cyprus. That's your security. Forget it. You know, that is going to be his transaction, I think.
Yes, it's true that the new American administration is not following any kind of, you know, already established pattern. And they're saying, incredible things. But this is, for me, is a very dangerous situation for any geography that is suffering from a long-running dispute, mm-hmm. because that means that they're very vulnerable to very eccentric suggestions coming from the American administration. So the defined expectation from this new process is to find a common ground. And the reason why I think many Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots are finding this whole process completely irrelevant and that they don't believe that would lead anywhere is partly because they don't see a common ground can be found. So maybe we talk a bit about this. So the official positions of the sides are well defined, and we know that the Greek Cypriots articulate their commitment to the bicommunal, bizonal federation and the United Nations Security Council resolutions. And Turkey/Turkish Cypriot position is now a two-state solution, which seems not acceptable by anyone. So is there any way, for the United Nations to find a common ground, at least a starting point? How do you see this picture? This time, maybe Fiona, you want to start, maybe also make suggestions. What are the things that can be given and taken? What are the things that can be part of give and take? What is the issue on energy? What about the energy grid? What about, so maybe also this. So how would you see, you know, the March meeting?
Well, I have speculated publicly that I think Turkey could be coming with an offer about energy, cooperation on energy. And it's based on remarks by Turkey's foreign minister, Hakan Fidan, when he came in January. But since I've written that, I am doubting myself because there's no hint of it anywhere else. So maybe I was just wishful thinking on my part or too much reading it in. But my
hunch... Tatar also mentioned it after the Di Carlo meeting. He also mentioned that energy collaboration could take place between the sides.
Ah, okay.
Yes, it was in his statements after the Di Carlo meeting, I think.
So are we saying that we are going to see discussions, things outside the Cyprus problem itself, than the Cyprus problem? Like we got used to discussing the power sharing, the territory, the guarantees and all these kind of things. Are you suggesting that the talks in Geneva will be also shaped or maybe even led by the relations between Greece and Turkey, the energy deal and other issues? Is this what you're suggesting?
So I think what is, put it this way, if it's not pre-planned properly, you're going to get a big mess where the Greek Cypriots come and they say, our proposal is to start again from Crans-Montana and let's talk about the Guterres framework. And Turkey will turn around and say, forget that. Let's talk about energy deals, starting with the interconnector. There's the Great Sea interconnector coming from Crete to Cyprus and then eventually to Israel. But also Turkey wants to send an electricity cable from Turkey to northern Cyprus. And my worry is that Greek Cypriots will be so shocked by that, they'll just say, oh, no. And then Turkey will start preventing the cable laying from Crete to Cyprus because it cuts across the area that they signed an agreement with Libya back in 2019. And so you end up with this big mess of another hot incident over energy in the Eastern Mediterranean. So I don't know.
That's the issue. Nobody knows. I mean, we have been thinking about the Cyprus problem, reading everything, making analysis on the Cyprus issue. And if we are not in a situation to be able to make healthy predictions, this is also an indication that the process, if there is one, is being led behind the scenes. And whether it's a healthy process or not, it's of course another discussion. It means that if there will be any kind of an opening, the communities, the people will not be ready for it. And I doubt if there are local leaderships who will be able to promote such deals. And maybe talk a bit about the upcoming date. So in March, March is the time, 17 and 18, if I'm not mistaken, for this Geneva meeting. And then we have the Turkish Cypriot presidential elections in October, in 2025. And in May, we have the Republic of Cyprus parliamentary elections in 2026. So there is this natural sequencing as well. So I was thinking that will Turkey try to, let's say, make an opening in a way that will not be seen as if it is making a concession from May, and if there will be a change of Turkish Cypriot leadership in October, Turkey might come up and say, you know, that we discussed some openings, some ideas in Geneva. Now that we have a Turkish Cypriot leadership, we're going to go to Nicosia and then discuss with the new Turkish Cypriot leader, if there will be one, a new one. And here we are coming up with a new power sharing mechanism. We are still bound by our commitment to the two-state solution, but we are ready to discuss some sort of a power-sharing arrangement between the two, i.e. a confederal model. So will Republic of Cypriot, will Greek Cypriot parties and the leadership be ready to face it, analyze it, and then start playing the game? That's the question that I have in my mind, really. And I know that Greece is actually driving this process a lot, pushing for it a lot. Now that Greece is also playing an important role in the Security Council, I think the Turkish-Greek relations might eventually come to a point where some sort of a power-sharing arrangement can be discussed. But I'm not sure if the Greek Cypriot side is ready for it?
So on the one hand, I believe that Turkey is now clearly the key. Whether it will at least accept to engage in some sort of a discussion about how the future post-solution model of Cyprus could be. Having said that, I do believe that we are at a stage in which we are beyond labels. So by Zonar, by Communal Federation, two states and all of the unitary state and all of this, I think the attempt will be to have a discussion that will not necessarily be starting off from the bi-zonal, bi-communal federation, let's say. Obviously, you are having this in the context of negotiations under the United Nations. The UN Secretary General will be there. So obviously, you know, it's going to be a discussion. There is no sort of... there is no such thing as kind of moving beyond the agreed framework. So let's establish this. Everything is taking place under the United Nations as well. So that framework is there. So that's settled and we have it set there. At the same time, though, the question is, could this possibility give the Greek Cypriots the necessary pretext to say that they cannot engage in this discussion? So that's one question, because if the discussion will start without writing down what we said before, then could the Greek Cypriots use this in order to escape the process and then present it to the Greek Cypriot public as though, you know, the Turkey was intransigent? At the same time, are we still at that level in which the Greek Cypriots could leave, even if they feel disgruntled? Because we need to think that the current situation on the ground, the regional dynamics that we explained before, they kind of necessitate something to happen on this issue. So I don't think that that is a possibility for the Greek Cypriots, and I hope that this is clear. So what I am trying to say is that I believe that this conference could be the beginning of a discussion on Cyprus that we haven't kind of seen before still.
I think ideally, let's say, if you weren't bound by UN Security Council resolutions, the ideal way to start a discussion on how to solve the Cyprus problem is to change the question and say, how do we live, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, together peacefully on this island? Just that. So the goal is secure, peaceful coexistence, however that looks like. Because of Security Council resolutions, you can't at least publicly start with that question. You have to start elsewhere. But you, Andromache, you've mentioned before about could, or you've suggested that the three singles could be a kind of joint area to hang it on. So the three singles, if you remember from February 2014, was single sovereignty, single citizenship and single international personality. Now, with that, you could end up with a very, very loose federation or a confederation. You might get Turkey and the Turkish Cypriots on board to say, okay, this is the principle on which we're prepared to negotiate. There'd be a lot of international pressure we'd need on the Greek Cypriots to agree that that was sort of the basis. But that's where you might, you know, if you have to keep within parameters, that's potentially a place to start. But like I said, ideally, you want to privately start with how do we coexist and build it from the bottom up again. And of course, get the public involved. Otherwise, no one's ever going to accept any of this.
Let's talk a bit about the things that are constantly affecting us. Like, for example, the crossings. And it affects the talks because people say, you know, those two, they couldn't even solve the crossings issue. How are they going to solve all the big Cyprus problem? Is it really possible to use the process in a way that we can get small gains, like more technical committees being effective, maybe to carry the discussion to the public, maybe some citizens' assemblies that we have been advocating for some time? Is it possible to talk about some, you know, interesting things that will make people start believing in the process again? I don't know, maybe I know that you've been also talking about this idea, Fiona, for some time about why we should be having the whole process to be redesigned. Mm-hmm. And of course, those who are against the redesign of the process are saying, look, we are not in a very difficult time. We cannot really commit ourselves for the redesign of the whole things, because anything that we have taken for granted is already falling apart. So what do you want to say about these discussions and also the crossings?
So I think in our earlier discussions, not recorded here, but Andrew Mackey made a good point that if the only thing we get out of Geneva is new crossing points, then that's a colossal waste of Turkish time, Greek time, and UK time. I don't think you use those words. Those are my words. But, you know, we saw this in Crans-Montana, that they brought the SG, the Secretary General, when they weren't ready, and that was kind of against usual protocol and a total waste of time. And he was clearly very angry, and that's why they haven't made a huge effort to do stuff since, because they didn't believe anybody was ready. But at the same time, what I find really confusing is that the Mia Milia, or Haspalat in Turkish crossing, is apparently supported by both chambers, right? And yet neither side can agree on it. And yet the crossing points are going to benefit both sides. And I'll tell you why. Is that there's a perception at the moment that there's still Greek Cypriots pouring over the crossing points to the north. That's actually reversed now. So last year, crossings from north to south, so from Turkish Cypriots crossing to the south, was up 25%. And it was down 15%, Greek Cypriots and others, anyone living here, crossing to the north. So what does that mean? It means Greek Cypriots are earning money from Turkish Cypriots when it comes to regular shopping and stuff. And on the other hand, on Green Line trade, the south is now the second largest, they call it exports, so the second largest market for trading goods for Turkish Cypriots after Turkey. So both sides are going to benefit if you open a crossing point. But unfortunately, as I was telling a diplomat yesterday, rationality is not what rules in this place. So it just kind of puzzles me that they can't do that.
And not only that, Fiona, but we are now in the very disappointing situation in which you see Republic of Cyprus President Nikos Christodoulidis constantly referring to the Mia Milia Hezbollah crossing as the Turkish Cypriot crossing, or as the crossing that will benefit the Turkish Cypriot. So we have kind of separated crossing points into who profits more. Mm. And for some reason, the Republic of Cyprus president thinks that the Mia Milia crossing, which could really loosen the pressure on the Agios Domitios crossing point, and it could also facilitate the Green Line trade as well more. And for some reason, the Republic of Cyprus president is presenting this as the Turkish Cypriot crossing. So it's kind of very disappointing to see this taking mm-hmm. place.
What about the citizens assemblies? You've been advocating this a lot, Fiona.
My hypothesis is that you are only going to get real movement on the Cyprus problem, whatever that is. So whether it's by zone or by communal, whether it's two states, whether it's step-by-step solution, whatever, you're only going to get that if you get a mandate from the people to do that. And I don't mean through a referendum, not at the beginning anyway. You need them to understand the whole process. And I was involved, I'll be doing podcasts on this later as well. I've been involved with, you know, Meltem Onurkan Samani from the Cyprus Peace and Dialogue Center. We're doing a number of iterations, if you like, of how you might run a citizens' assembly, and starting very small and sometimes mono-communal, just Greek Cypriots or just Turkish Cypriots. But the idea is that you need, with a citizens' assembly, you need to give people a whole bunch of information, then give them time to deliberate, and then ask them to come up with some solutions. And Cyprus might not be ready for a whole scale, let the citizens solve the Cyprus problem. But I think there are elements of it, even maybe in how you redesign the process, that you could put to citizens. And what we've done so far, what's really interesting, is people really appreciate being asked their opinion. Even if they didn't know much about the subject before, we chose a subject about green transition. So we gave them a whole bunch of information, and then they had to come up with policy suggestions. And everybody keeps saying, oh, no, we haven't got time for that. Well, you know, we didn't have time for that back in 2017, and now it's 2025. So I think it's naive to think that if the top level guys come up with whatever their solution is going to be, that you're going to get the citizens to accept it if they haven't been properly consulted. You know, you can't do, we know from all of the surveys all over the world that citizens don't trust their politicians anymore. So you absolutely have to get them involved. Otherwise, whatever you decide is not going to be sustainable.
You know, on this, I was looking at the pictures of the visit of Mrs. Rosemary Di Carlo. She met the women, the Alliance of Women. And they reiterated the need for women and the youth to be engaged in the process. But really, I need to confess that it's like I was watching it and I was thinking, it's been like 9 years that these things have been discussed. Like it's been 9 years at least that they've come to the fore and that people are asking for greater inclusion of the public, basically, in the process. And we are still at this stage in which nothing has changed, basically. And when it comes to the citizens' assemblies, as you said, I believe that regardless of what a settlement could look like, you have the reality of the need for two communities to coexist in some way, coexist on the same island. I mean, mm-hmm. that is a reality. Coexist on the same island, kind of get engaged in what is happening around them, get engaged in what is being discussed about the future of these islands. So citizens' assemblies clearly make sense. And I was reading that the citizens, the consultative body of citizens was a part of Mr. Christodoulidis's suggestions that he had put down when he met Ersin Tatar, the Turkish Cypriot leader. And I was thinking when I read the suggestions that had Mr. Christodoulidis been genuine about this, he would have known that there are initiatives on the ground from civil society and, for instance, the one in which you are involved, of people already working for citizens' assemblies and for greater inclusion. And he could have looked to you or to these organizations. And we don't see this taking place in a proactive and effective way. In a sense,
let's talk a bit about local politics towards the end of our program. And I'll ask this question to Andromache. We feel that the Cyprus problem is not on the agenda, really, in the Cyprus Greek Cypriot politics. And number one question, what are the issues that are being discussed in the Greek Cypriot politics? And number two, how do you see the role of Christodoulidis, he wasn't supported by Akel or DC when he was, at least formally, when he was elected. So he was a newcomer. There was a lot of discussion that he would reshape the Greek Cypriot politics. And how do you see this and the big the classical political parties and, you know, like Akel and DC? We have also new players like Volt Cyprus. How do you see the Greek Cypriot politics responding possibly to any development in Cyprus problem? And then maybe I'll discuss a bit about what's going on in the
Turkish Cypriot politics. Well, that is an interesting question, Kemal, because everything that we are following comes in the midst of an unprecedented rise of the far right and of ELAM in the Republic of Cyprus. All the polls show that ELAM will most likely be the third political party with double-digit percentages. And we need to be prepared for this. While this is happening, you see the Democratic Rally, the DC, going increasingly towards the right, trying to get back some of the people that it is losing to ELAM. And they are really losing people to ELAM. Like we saw a former DC MP, Hambulas, he went to an anti-migrant rally in Limassol that was organized by ELAM. He took pictures with the whole ELAM leadership. Andreas Papakharalambos, he used to be the mayor of Strovolos. He was a DC member for years. And he's also reportedly going to run with ELAM in the 2026 elections. So in this situation, this is going increasingly to the right, and one wonders who are the people within DC that they can really sort of support a process in a genuine way, I mean. At the same time, on the other hand, you have a KEL that is trying to rally the left-wing support, and it is also going to more to the left, I would say. The parties, the traditional parties of the center, they seem to also be in a situation in which they are looking to see what they are going to do. You have Volt. I am the president of Volt, so this is all said in this. What I am saying, obviously, is a personal opinion. These developments are taking place in a situation in which things are not stable. Things are changing. You have all the talk about the Auditor General potentially also running in the May 2026 elections. You also have some current MPs who said they are not going to run, but they are kind of creating a watchdog for preserving Hellenism in the country, and they are staunchly against the bizonal bicommunal federation. So you have these sort of political groups, let's say, rising as well. So it is really a big question mark about how the political parties could kind of engage in this process. What I can assure you is that Volt Cyprus will be supportive. that I can say for sure. But in general, the whole, I mean, the bigger context is kind of one of uncertainty. And without strong political leaders that can pave the way forward. Yeah.
I think all of what you just said, Andromache, emphasizes the reason why you need to throw it to the people to ask them what they actually want. Forget tiny parties with, you know, one seat saying we don't want X or Y, you know.
Well, you know, when it comes to the Turkish Cypriot politics, everybody is now making their plans for the presidential elections in the north, the leadership elections that will take place in October 2025. There's a lot of talk about the CTP leader pro-solution Tufan Erhürman will be the leading candidate. There's a lot of speculation whether Turkey is actively putting its own support behind Ersin Tatar or not. You know, there is, back in 2020, everybody in Turkey was making sure that they don't want Mr. Akıncı to stay in power. I mean, they would be ready for any solution, but Mr. Akıncı not being elected. I don't think that this is the case in the upcoming elections. They might have preferences, but I'm not sure whether these preferences will be determining the outcome of the elections. The three-party coalition is a mess. I think everybody is waiting for this thing to be over as soon as possible, but somehow Turkey told them not to make a mess before the elections in October, so they are carrying out their duties as much as they could. But it's sad that the Turkish Cypriots were one of the leading, I don't want to say power, but leading actors at the times of Mr. Akıncı of this process. Now they are not, clearly. And of course, we are now preparing to see the Turkish Cypriot Parliament, Turkish Cypriot Presidential Palace, and the Turkish Cypriot Courts to move physically into a new campus, which is being built just near the Ayios Domitios crossing point. It's a huge setup, and it looks like one of those, you know, Turkish establishments, you know, showing off a pride and showing off a, you know, it was clear that the Turkish Cypriot needed some, you know, better facilities for their own administration. However, this also is a sign of how Turkey is seeing North Cyprus. You know, I mean, everybody's talking about the fact that unless we find a solution to the Cyprus problem, Turkey will be more and more, you know, we will be playing a more active role in the Turkish Cypriot politics. But so this is generally the framework. I think everybody after this show will continue to ask us if we should be expecting any hope from the upcoming process. I think the best we could expect is some sort of, number one, some sort of an agreement that, you know, this is not going to be the end of the process. And two, if we could get some, you know, small benefits like new crossing points being agreed, maybe new technical committees, more involvement in the civil society, I think this will be considered as a success story, if you ask me.
Until Trump speaks.
Until Trump speaks. But I think you're right, Kamal. We need these small wins, despite what I said about using Geneva to get new crossing points. But I think people need to see some kind of movement. Otherwise, we'll all get very cynical.
Yeah, but we need to remember that we also went through a Geneva that collapsed. And speaking as a peace activist, I think we all know that after every failed attempt, we are left there trying to pick up the pieces. Mm-hmm. So that's also something to have in mind.
In the past, we criticized the United Nations when they were organizing the last Geneva summit because it created even more vulnerability to those who really wanted to work for a solution. So let's hope that this process is well prepared and well designed, and let's hope that Turkish-Greek rapprochement is maybe a driving force behind it. Let's hope that international communities
is staying engaged. And let's hope that the sides are ready to engage in the process with an open mind and with the clear grasp of the significance of times. And I say this because I believe it profoundly. Things are changing. I do not think that the possibility of discussing a single country for Cyprus will be forever on the table. We are still there. We can still do it. But I really think that we need to be aware that times are changing, that this is a very volatile setting, and we need to grasp an opportunity to work for the better of Cyprus now that we at least have it on the table, with the spirit of compromise and with the understanding that 7 years have, and we are not still in 2017 when one could really claim to be willing to go back to the Guterres framework. Mm-hmm. We've moved beyond that. And if we're really interested in a united country, we need to be able to appreciate this and engage with an open mind.
Very good closure. It's time for a shameless plug. For those who want to listen to our podcasts and Fiona's podcast, it's theislandtalks.fm. And for those who are interested, more professional, more structured economic and political analysis by Sapienta Economics, please visit sapientaeconomics.com. You can find a more detailed and more well-prepared analysis in terms of economy, in terms of security, in terms of politics. And and thank you very much, Fiona, for coming to our program and for your analysis. And thank you, Andromache. I know that you're spending a lot of time in the Greek Cypriot politics these days, but it was good
to have this program with you always.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.